Joe Schumacher and Joe McDonald run early.
Yeah, well, it's not 8 a.m. having arrived. I'm going to call the Committee on Taxes to order. Sounds like quite a rambunctious group this morning. All right. Well, we have a quorum already, so we're going to go right to the minutes. Waste no time at all. Representative Les Lagarde moves approval of the March 20th, 2019 minutes. Is there any discussion on those? Representative McDonald.
Yes, I think my name is misspelled. There needs to be an E-I-E-I-O.
All right, we will take note of that, Representative McDonald.
Corny.
Hearing no other further positive, productive comments, I'm going to call for the vote on the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The March 20th, 2019 minutes are approved. And so we will go to the first bill, and that is House File 1563, Representative Richardson. And would someone care to move Representative Richardson's bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lean moves House File 1563 for possible consideration into the omnibus tax bill. Representative Richardson, welcome to the committee. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 1563 is a sales tax construction exemption for the Mendota Heights Fire Department. And since the department has already started, the tax would be paid up front, and they would be looking for a refund of that tax if this is able to move forward. I have a couple of testifiers with me today, and we can move to the mayor if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
That would be great. So welcome. Mayor, please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Neil Garlock. I'm in the third year as mayor of the city of Mendota Heights, and our population is about 11,000 people. If you know our area, we're a first ring suburb of St. Paul, directly across the Minnesota River and by Fort Snelling and the Minneapolis Airport. I am here today regarding House File number 1563, which is asking for an exemption of state sales tax being imposed on materials and supplies which will be used for the Mendota Heights Fire Station construction project. I'm joined here today by the Fire Chief, Dave Drelin, and our City Administrator, Mark McNeil. Either of these gentlemen are available to answer any detailed questions. Some of the history and background of this project, I would defer now to the Chief of the Fire Department, Chief Dave Drelin.
Thank you, Mayor. So, good morning. Please state your name.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and representatives. My name is Dave Drelin. I'm the Fire Chief for the City of Mendota Heights. The Mendota Heights Fire Department is a small department made up of 36 members who provide fire and rescue services to the cities of Mendota, Lilydale, Sunfish Lake, and Mendota Heights, out of a single fire station located in Mendota Heights. In 2015, a building committee was formed for the purpose of formally identifying current and future needs related to our current fire station, which was built in 1984. The committee studied the building's physical condition and identified multiple operational issues with the current fire station. The process identified issues in seven broad areas. There is significant overcrowding throughout the entire administrative and operational areas of the station. The lack of space in the apparatus bay forces firefighters who are responding to emergency calls to get their gear on just feet from moving apparatus. There are significant health issues related to the breathing of the diesel exhaust from the apparatus and the inability to properly decontaminate the firefighters' gear and related equipment. The facility is unable to support current ambulance operations. Ambulances from Health East are forced to park outside year-round and remain running day and night in order to keep the emergency equipment at proper temperatures. There is no space to simulate even the most basic types of hands-on training. Many of the building's mechanical systems are well beyond their useful lives. The facility is without most technology and data systems that you would expect to see in any building or business today. As an example, 33 members share one computer. Ultimately, the Station Building Committee and the Council agreed the best solution was to add an addition onto the existing station and then remodel and upgrade parts of the old station. The plan stood out for two reasons. First, it captured the value of the current station, resulting in savings when compared to demolishing the current building and constructing an entirely new one. Second, it lets the department remain fully operational during the construction process. Over the past year, we've been working to fully design the building and obtain an accurate cost estimate. The committee felt that a budget of $7 million would allow the department to build a modest but yet functional facility that would meet the initial and the initial safety concerns of the original committee. We opened bids on the project in February. Unfortunately, we learned that due to an extremely robust economy and a short labor supply, the bids were $1.1 million over the estimated cost. The building committee and city council received reviewed multiple options to reduce the cost, including rejecting the bids. Ultimately, we determined that rejecting the bids and rebidding would not result in lower prices and would likely delay the project, resulting in higher costs due to another year's inflation. Thank you.
Thank you. So any questions for Mayor Garlock or Chief Freeland? If not, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 1563? All right. Seeing none, members, any questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious why the legislature hasn't just decided to have this as a in statute that all fire halls would have a tax exemption on their buildings. This isn't the first one, of course, we've seen. Does staff know what the history would be on this?
Yeah, well, in fact, Representative McDonald, I think, you know, Governor Walz's bill provided an exception this year in his proposal. And I think it's about $23 million a year or a little bit more than that. So it's just whatever might be the priorities of whatever would be in the, you know, the tax bill as far as dollars and so forth. So, yeah, no, it's, you could just have a blanket exemption or, in this case, take them one at a time. So I don't know if anyone has another answer to that. So, anything else? If not, Representative Richardson, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just ask for support.
Thank you very much. Representative Lean renews his motion to lay over House File 1563 for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. Mayor, Chief, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee. Thank you very much.
Yep. So, Representative Richardson, you can have another bill here, House File 1813. Anyone care to move that bill? Representative Lean moves House File. Thank you very much. Representative Lean moves House File 1813 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1813 is another construction exemption. This one would be for the Dakota County's Smart Center, and I have Sheriff Tim Leslie with me here today to start off the testimony, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
That would be great. Sheriff Leslie, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Tim Leslie, Dakota County Sheriff, representing Dakota County today. Smart Center was funded last year in the last year's legislative session. To the tune of $6.5 billion, Did I say billion?
Yeah,
I meant million.
I don't. I don't know what type of a target we're going to have, but we may not be able to accommodate that.
Yeah, no, that's a lot of zeros. To build a building in Invergrove Heights that would facilitate training and crisis intervention for law enforcement and other first responders. We're talking about the fire service. EMS, dispatch personnel. Law enforcement has obviously failed in some of those areas, and we're initiating based on the fact that in 2017 the legislative session brought $24 million towards law enforcement to do mandated training in crisis intervention, conflict management, and bias and implicit bias for law enforcement. This center would provide that training for law enforcement and other first responders, as well as hold collaborative efforts that we do in Dakota County in terms of electronic crimes task force, which is investigating and taking evidence from various electronic devices, as well as the drug task force that operates in Dakota County. and that's what the purpose of the building would be. And we have Todd Hoopengartner here from Dakota County to talk about exactly what that would cost.
Very good. Welcome. Please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Todd Hoopengartner. I'm the Director of Parks, Facilities, and Fleet for Dakota County. The facility itself would be, the project is about $12.8 million. The actual construction cost would be about $8.5 million. We estimate that the request in front of you would save about $200,000 in the project cost, which we would look to reinvest in the unique nature of this facility to provide a very flexible space that can be used for law enforcement and emergency management training. And I can certainly try to respond to any questions you have regarding the facility itself.
Very good. And, sir, what was your last name?
Hoopengartner. Hoopengartner.
Okay.
It's a lot.
Hoopengartner. We'll get the spelling when you sign the form at the end, but just wanted to
perfectly
get that
fine.
Right. Very good. Any questions for any of the testifiers? Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Richardson, I appreciate you bringing this bill forward and your testifiers and community partners on this issue. I know the Clay County, we just built a new jail and law enforcement center, and a big part of that was a new mental health component and figuring out ways we can work with this population more. So it's just really good to see that law enforcement is beginning to recognize this issue, like all of us. We're paying more attention to it and being a strong community partner on this issue. So thank you.
Before I go to more members here, I'm going to see, is there, well, any, I'm sorry, any questions for the testifiers? Very good. Thank you so much for your testimony. Is there any folks from the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 1813? Seeing none, any other comments from members? If not, Representative Richardson, any last comments?
Just asking for support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. And Representative Lean renews his motion to lay over House File 1813 for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. Thank you very much, Representative. Next, Representative Joachim. So I think we're going to... Representative Swazinski, would you be ready to do your bill? We'll come back for that. We'll move to House File 1442. Representative Swazinski, would you like to move your bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. I would like to move 1442 for possible inclusion in a future tax bill.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, members. Chair Mark Wirt, House File 1442 is a pretty straightforward bill. It simply relieves a local school district of the burdens in which state policies place upon local taxpayers for sales tax on construction materials for the local school project. I brought Dan Diet, who is the superintendent of the Minneota School, and I'd like to have him talk a little bit about their project. So, thank you.
Very good. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Thank you. My name is Dan Diet, and I am the superintendent of Minneota Public Schools. I'm also the superintendent of Ivanhoe Public Schools. I have two of them. Thank you for having me today. Minneota is about 12 miles northwest of Marshall, Minnesota, and our school district is one building, K-12, pre-K-12, and we have around 530 students total in the school district. Just recently, we're a very proud community, like most school districts are. Most recently, we just achieved something for only the fifth time in Minnesota history, which is we won a volleyball state championship and a girls basketball state championship all in the same school year. So,
Mr. Diet, your representative, Representative Swazinski, brought that to the committee yesterday.
So that was exciting for us. But besides that, our story is similar to the first people that sat here and testified. Our building is around 70 years old. We had a lot of plumbing and electrical problems in our building that we needed to solve. And we went to the taxpayers in November of 2017 and asked for a $5.25 million bond and got 63% approval. So that did go through. We also had issues with getting our bids in the budget that we had, and we had to go back three times and still didn't get it to where we wanted, but we went ahead with the project because we had no choice but to get rid of the cast iron plumbing and the other problems that were causing us. We had a lot of backing up going on. We actually had to close a few bathrooms towards the end of that school year because they wouldn't function anymore. And because we were over budget, we still went ahead. We tried to fill in some of the gaps with our long-term facility maintenance money and our general fund. But when we went for the bond, we thought we could be tax exempt, and so we didn't ask for that part in the bond. When we got to the point of realizing what it meant to be tax exempt and all the burdens that it brings upon a small school district with only one business manager, we decided we couldn't do it that way, and we put the tax back into all of our costs. And so we have now paid all the tax on all our supplies and materials. And being that we already weren't in, we didn't get our bids in the way we wanted, it's just added another amount of money on top of what we've already had to try to fill in with our long-term facility maintenance and our general fund. And so we are asking that, Representative Szulczynski said, if we could have relief on that so that we can. Our project will be done at the end of this summer. We started last summer. We've done some in the middle of the year, and it'll be completed around August or September of this year.
Very good. Any questions for Superintendent Diaz? Okay, I'm going to thank you very much. I'm going to go to the audience. Is there anyone in the audience who would care to testify for or against House File 1442? Members, any questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. See, has the legislature in the past ever done a blanket tax exemption for all materials for school buildings in the past? And why not?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, we haven't done it for school districts, but we did actually, when we had a number of county courthouses come forward looking for individual construction exemptions, that year we did actually do a blanket exemption, which is still in law for county courthouses.
Representative McDonald.
So, Mr. Chair, so if, for example, this particular bill, Swedes, Representative Szulczynski's bill, does make it in the tax bill, so that school will be, they'll get a clawback in a way, and the sales tax will be reimbursed back to the school. The other schools that didn't come down to the legislature going forward, and bill, they'll still have to pay or will pay or had paid, like the Delano. We had a $65 million school referendum 3 years ago. They'll still pay their sales tax. So it's kind of a patchwork, kind of a, gee, if you got down to the legislature and got a bill, you get a tax exempt. If you didn't,
if you had a better representative.
So that's the,
oh, yes,
that's the fact,
that's,
huh?
That's correct. Just like the last couple bills, it's kind of one at a time. And you know, the state could do blankets. It's a matter, I suppose, of cost and policy decisions. But, you know, right now it's kind of been the philosophy to take them one at a time.
Mr. Chair, Representative, doesn't it just make sense to the committee, the tax committee, that we should just do a blanket for fire halls and schools? Tax dollars, paying for tax dollars for buildings? Or do you think it's best in our interest to do a per case, per item basis?
Representative McDonald, I think it kind of goes back a bit to the concept where a few years ago we exempted sales tax, you know, for cities and counties. They didn't have to pay that, but for years they did. And so it's, I think it comes down to a cost probably as one of the big drivers. But Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe somebody can verify this, but I believe when I was involved with school board politics and building constructions, the issue is that if the school district decided to be the purchaser of the materials and so forth, they were tax exempt. In this particular case, it's easier if the contractor gets that exemption, but the reality is that they could get exemption without that if they needed to.
Yes, and great point, Representative Petersburg, and that's what Governor Walz's bill does. It deals with those situations. Any other comments on? All right, Representative Budzinski, and what's the mascot for that team
that,
again?
That would be, Mr. Chair, that would be the Minnesota Vikings, the original Vikings.
The original Vikings.
Minnesota. Oh.
All right, so so any other Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, being the coach that I am, I'm curious to know how many of the same girls played volleyball and basketball?
100%.
Yes. Well, I remember back in the 80s, Minnesota, if I remember, won about three state Class C football championships in a row. And that quarterback, he went on to play.
Chris Might. Yes. He actually coached for the Redskins for a little while, too, as an assistant coach.
Yes, and I remember Dilworth made the playoffs this one year, and we had them first round. The football field was right across from where I lived in Dilworth, and so I was at the game, of course. But they had a couple 15-yard penalties, Minnesota, so it was like first and 40. Within two plays, they had a first down. So that quarterback was just boom, 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 and it was a passing team. It was unusual for a high school team.
His father was the superintendent at the time, and so that he was also the coach for Minnesota. So.
And if my memory is correct, wasn't he the music or band teacher?
I don't know. He was a superintendent, but yeah. I don't know if he did more teaching or not.
I think he was also at one time the band teacher. So, with that, anything, thank you, Representative Budzinski, any closing comments?
No, I think that's about it. I appreciate your time. And just to remind you, we were state champions of football last year, too, so since we're talking about that.
Oh, now you're kind of starting to break.
The boys and the girls are both great. So.
Very good. So Representative Budzinski renews his motion to lay over House File 1442 for possible inclusion. Superintendent, thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. All right. Representative Joaquin, we're going to move back to 2472.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Welcome. And so would you like to move your bill?
Members, I'd like to move House File 2472 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
And Representative Joaquim, I see you also have an A1 amendment, which looks to just change the date.
Yes, Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment just puts an end date on the exemption.
Representative Joaquim moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? Not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. H. File 2472 allows a sales tax exemption of building materials and equipment incorporated into the construction, remodeling, expansion, or improvement of St. Louis Park's Interpretive Center at Westwood Hills Nature Center. The Westwood Hills Nature Center has been an important part of St. Louis Park and the region since it was built 40 years ago. It is now sorely in need of remodeling, not just because of its age, but the need for space as the community itself has grown and the surrounding communities. Planning for the new center has gone through an extensive planning project with the community members in St. Louis Park. The proposed project will connect people to nature through the site and building design while exhibiting innovative energy-saving measures that will also be educational tools. We've heard a few of these type sales exemption bills already, as you all know. So I'm going to just turn the testimony over to Cindy Walsh, the Operations and Recreation Director of City of St. Louis Park, to describe the project further.
Thank you, President.
Good. Please state your name and please proceed.
Good morning. We appreciate the opportunity to be here, members of the committee and Chair Marquardt. I am here to talk a little bit about I'm Cindy Walsh, the Operations and Recreation Director for the City of St. Louis Park. This is Brian Hoffman, our Inspections Director. He will be assisting if you have any further questions. So thank you for the opportunity to be here. The Westwood Hills Nature Center is a unique building within the City of St. Louis Park, although I'd like to point out that it does serve a regional nature. As you've just heard the testimony from Minnesota School District, Westwood Hills Nature Center serves as the educational environmental opportunities for 10 or more school districts in the area, in addition to the City of St. Louis Park. So as Representative Joachim did mention, we are constructing a new Nature Center building. It will be the first of its kind in the state of Minnesota, as we are intending to build it as a zero-energy facility. In order to do that, We have added a number of energy efficiency type of things into the building. It has been designed with sustainability components as teaching tools, in addition to them serving as renewable energy uses on site. We have estimated that the sales exemption for this would be in the range of $250,000 to $300,000. So that is quite an additional component to the building. We would hope to use that money. Should we receive the sales tax exemption, we would like to add in some value-added things back into the building. We had to, with all projects, make some cuts in the process in order to be fiscally responsible to our taxpayers. So we do have some ideas of how we would use that money back in. One of the ideas is we would increase the amount of bird-friendly glass in the building. So we do have some bird-friendly glass. For those of you who aren't familiar with that, it tries to eliminate the bird strikes on the building. As you know, there have been many public buildings built that have had problems with bird strikes, and we're trying to eliminate that as much as possible, and we have some additional opportunities that we would do that. So with that, I do want to just reinforce it is intended to be the first zero-energy building in the state of Minnesota, inhabitable, and we have a number of pretty exciting sustainability factors as a part of that. So with that, I'll take any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Walsh. Any questions for Ms. Walsh? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize that this is a tax committee. Maybe we should just think about doing a blanket exemption for the public. Actually, Mr. Chair, I do have a question. This probably should go to the Energy Committee, but I'm curious to know what your definition of zero energy building is.
Please state your name and welcome.
Certainly, Chairman, committee members, thank you. My name is Brian Hoffman. I'm the Director of Inspections and Facilities Maintenance for the city. And this building has gone through quite an extravagant process, and the idea is that over a year-long period that the energy generation is sufficient to cover all of the energy usage. This is an all-electric building. There's no natural gas in it. And the photovoltaic panel array on the roof, which was actually designed to be tilted and aiming south, is about 160 kilowatts, which should cover all of the energy usage. All of the components of the building were designed for minimum energy usage, the LED lighting, natural flow-through ventilation, a whole bunch of components, including geothermal incorporated, to basically get us down to that net zero goal.
Representative Fabian, anything further? Very good. Any other questions for either Ms. Walsh or Mr. Hoffman? Dennis Wozinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just from a cost perspective, if you just went straight forward on a regular building, the same square footage, what do you think your cost would have been versus the extravagant cost that was stated?
Chairman and committee member, the cost difference of the building compared to something that just met the minimum standards of the building code to what we've got now is probably about $1.5 million. Now, once again, this was really trying to also make sure that everything in there was sort of almost visible, and there are components to make sure that it can be used as a teaching tool. So when students come in, they can see and learn about how the building achieved that zero energy goal. So.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Joaquin.
I'd like to add, with a building like this, too, it's about the future and the cost to the city and maintaining it and upkeeping it and the energy usage. So I don't know if they've done runs at all to see at what point in time that return on investment will hit. And like they said, it's a very good tool for teaching. And I think when he said extravagant, he meant the extravagant process. They went through over a year with the community and getting input and tons of meetings. So just to make sure that it was what the citizens wanted.
Very good. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I apologize, this being the tax committee, but we're... So your local energy provider is, I assume, XL, and you have some sort of a service agreement with XL to make sure that when the sun's not shining, you're getting electricity, and if you're creating some surplus, you're going to sell that back to them, or give me the details of your agreement.
Mr. Hoffman.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. The building will have be on the grid. It will be connected to Xcel Energy. And when the sun's not shining in the middle of winter, we will be drawing from the grid. And at that point, what we're going to be doing is hopefully, if Xcel still has a program, buying power through the Renewable Connect program, which is basically wind and solar generated on the Xcel grid. And then when the panels are producing, the power will go back to Xcel. And once again, this way the building will always have the power to be operational, but yet it should be generating enough so that over the period of a year, it basically generates all of its use and it goes back to Excel.
What I figured.
Okay. Any other Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, sir, I bet the planning costs were probably a little higher to design something like this. Would you comment on what had to occur as you planned a design like this?
Ms. Walsh.
Thank you for your question. Yes, we did have a very extensive planning process. We actually worked with an energy and sustainability consultant out of Canada that has done a variety of different types of facilities, and we've worked mainly with HGA Architects and Engineers that's located in downtown Minneapolis. So we did do extensive planning. We went through a number of reiterations with what types of renewable energy we wanted to use. Some are more cost prohibitive than others. So, again, trying to be as fiscally responsible as we can. As Brian Hoffman has mentioned, we are using photovoltaics. We are using geothermal. We have a thermal massing wall. We really tried to keep in mind not only the energy usage and trying to be zero energy, but how would we use this as a teaching tool? Because so many school districts do use our center as their means of environmental education. We wanted to make sure that we could tell that story and be able to explain that to the students and the adults who use the facility. Did that answer your question?
Representative Harris.
Mr. Chair. And Ms. Walsh, so what's the total cost of the project?
Ms. Walsh.
The total cost of the project all in is $12.5 million, and that includes all of the design features, construction management, and oversight. About 9.6 of that is actually construction of the building.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, being that we're wandering a little bit here from direction of the bill, when you mentioned 10 school districts, how do you handle the operational costs of the facility? Do they participate somehow, or does the city basically pick up all the costs? Is it
my question? Ms. Walsh.
We actually, it's a combination thereof. It is a city-run facility, so the city bears the operational expense burden of the project. We do charge program registration fees. So school districts do pay a fee per student to use that. We do subsidize the school districts in that. We have a very close partnership with the City of St. Louis Park School District, and we do view ourselves as a regional facility and work, as I said, with 10 different districts. They do pay a per pupil cost, but it is much less than would typically cover the cost of that. Our other program registrations and camps pay more of a cost recovery piece, but with the districts, we do lower those fees.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, represent school districts that are probably participating one way or another, and that's why I was curious how the costs are handled. Thank you.
Other questions from members of the testifiers? If not, thank you very much. Is there anyone from the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 2472 as amended? All right, see none. Members, any questions for the author of the bill? Representative Joaquin, final comments.
Yes, I just want to thank you for hearing this bill. The Westwood Hills Nature Center is not only an integral part of St. Louis Park community, it does serve the broader region. My kids went through the Hopkins districts, and we did take the trips over there for the Environmental Learning Center. It plays a really important role in educating and connecting residents to nature. The sales tax exemption would go a long way to help them complete their project, and I want to ask for your support.
Very good. Thank you to the testifiers, and Representative Joaquin renews her motion to lay over House File 2472 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax on this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Lean. Welcome, Representative Lean. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I do move House File 1862 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill.
Very good. And I see, Representative Lean, you have an A1 amendment.
I do. The A1 amendment provides technical clarifications throughout the bill. It provides clarification around who is responsible for the new reporting requirements in the bill and makes certain that these reporting requirements do not lead to privacy concerns of people receiving these services.
So Representative Lee moves the A1 amendment. Any questions or discussion on the A1 amendment? Hearing none, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Lean, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1862 would increase the appropriation for taxpayer assistance grants that support VITA and CTE tax preparation sites across Minnesota. The current base appropriation is $400,000 per year. VITA tax preparation sites offer free tax filing assistance for low-income households, the elderly, people with disabilities, and people with limited English-speaking capabilities. TCE tax preparation sites offer free tax filing assistance to people who are over the age of 60. The bill also expands eligible uses for taxpayer assistance grants to include support for financial capability services to tax filers for the purpose of setting up taxpayers for long-term financial sustainability and success. And this is the element of the bill that I was most excited about. Mr. Chair, committee members, I can now walk through the different sections of the bill. Section 1, Subdivision 1, establishes new definitions for financial capability services. Section 1, Subdivision 2, adds financial capability services to the allowable use of these grant dollars. Section 1, Subdivision 3, establishes eligibility guidelines for grant applicants. These include being nonprofit organizations registered with the IRS for VITA or TCE services and able to commit one staff or volunteer position to coordinate financial capability services and offer free assistance to open savings and transactional accounts, depositing all or part of tax refunds into savings or transactional accounts, and purchasing a savings bond with tax refund dollars. Section 1, Subdivision 4, protects against conflict of interest by prohibiting grantees from receiving compensation or funding from a financial institution that is in exchange for or contingent on the applicant offering specific products or services. Program applicants must also disclose any funding from a financial service institution whose products or services will be offered at the VITA or TCE tax preparation sites. Section 1, Subdivision 5, pertains to the Revenue Commissioner's public notice of the grant availability. Subdivision 6 lays out the types of technical assistance the Department of Revenue may offer to tax preparation sites. And the department is a new partner in this program for providing technical assistance, not only for the new financial capability services, but also for the existing tax preparation services. Prepare and Prosper is a nonprofit in St. Paul that used to provide the technical assistance for tax preparation sites across the state until 2017. The organization used foundational grant dollars to provide the assistance. However, these grant dollars are no longer available, and the Department of Revenue seemed best suited as the next logical partner to provide these technical assistance services. Subdivision 7 mandates reporting by grant recipients offering the financial capability services on how the grant dollars were used. And Section 2 increases the appropriation in the bill from $400,000 each fiscal year to $800,000 each fiscal year. It is typical for tax preparation applicant requests to be at least twice the available base appropriations in any given year. The additional dollars are also for the expanded financial capability functions under the bill. Section 2 also allows the Department of Revenue to use up to 5% of the additional appropriations for administrative purposes. And, Mr. Chair, committee members, I can now stand for questions, or we can let the testifiers make comments.
Very good. I see you have two testifiers. Why don't we go to the testifiers, Representative Lean, and then we'll take questions. So who wants to start and state your name?
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's good to see you again this morning. My name is Tracy Fishman. I'm the Executive Director of Prepare and Prosper. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1862, the Tax Time Savings Bill, to increase funding for the Taxpayer Assistance Grants Program and allow more flexibility so some funding can be used for integrated financial capability and savings promotion at the tax sites. I want to start by thanking our chief sponsor, Representative Lean, along with members of this committee who are signed on as co-sponsors, Representatives Carlson, Gomez, McDonald, and Swidzinski. We really appreciate your support. Prepare and Prosper is Minnesota's largest provider of free tax assistance. We leverage the expertise of 550 trained volunteers to serve nearly 13,000 people with free tax preparation and financial services, and we return nearly $25 million in tax refunds each year. We currently run 9 tax sites throughout the Twin Cities, and we're open year-round at our main location in St. Paul. We also link our customers with financial services and savings opportunities to maximize the impact of what we call the money moment of tax time to increase the financial impact of their tax refunds, and we also offer longer-term financial coaching. Last year, we helped over 1,300 people save more than $1.9 million of their tax refunds. We open savings accounts on site as well as prepaid debit cards, and we assist with direct deposit of refunds into new or existing checking and or savings accounts. This is especially important for tax customers who are underbanked and paying high costs of transacting in cash, including things like using check cashing and other alternative financial services. It is also a core component of our savings promotion work to counter the growing number of households who lack liquid savings. According to the Federal Reserve Board, about 40% of households would not be able to cover a $400 emergency. This is even more pronounced in communities of color. For example, with Black and Latino households having 7 to 10 times less liquid savings than white households. The Tax Time Savings Bill would help organizations that offer free tax assistance increase our collective ability to meet the significant demand for free tax assistance and integrated financial services across the state. As you know, tax credits like the Earned Income Tax Credit and our Working Family Credit here in Minnesota can greatly boost a family's income. Taxpayers use their hard-earned tax refunds, as you know, to meet basic needs like paying bills, putting food on the table, shoring up the sort of basic expenses, but also hopefully to save for an unexpected emergency and future goals. So free tax programs like ours and others across the state are a really important and valuable conduit for helping people save some of their tax refund. When taxpayers come to us, they work with a trained IRS-certified volunteer tax preparer, and every tax return is reviewed by a quality reviewer. So our extensive training and certification requirements contribute to our very high accuracy rate. Across the country, we're about 93% accuracy rate, so it's among the highest in the industry. Many customers this tax season have shared reflections on their experiences with Prepare and Prosper. Dexter said that in addition to our friendly, courteous, and professional staff and volunteers, he was offered a plethora of information to help him understand the new tax law changes. Alexis said she was happy to have our team walk her through everything to ensure she understood her tax returns and was happy to be offered other free financial services. And like Alexis, Louise was happy to have tax and other financial topics covered, especially the options around saving money, building credit, and managing her money. Last year, 33 nonprofits across the state offered 100 free tax preparation sites who received funding through the Taxpayer Assistance Grants Program. Altogether, these tax sites prepared 104,000 tax returns, including 1040, M1, and M1PR forms. But the Taxpayer Assistance Grants Program doesn't ever fully fund any single site, and requests, as you heard from Representative Lean, are double approximately the amount of available funding. So we know that many of these sites turn away eligible community members every year because of limited funding, and there are 20 counties in Minnesota without a single free tax preparation site. Since 2015, we've had a net loss of 33 tax sites across the state, in large part because it is often a struggle to secure sufficient funding to keep these sites operational. So House File 1862 would help existing free tax sites meet the need in their communities, and we sincerely hope it will also help reopen some sites that have recently closed. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you again for this opportunity to testify in support of the Tax Time Savings Bill and its importance in supporting Minnesota's low and moderate income tax filers. The return on these investments is great for our families and our communities.
Thank you. Ms. Fishman, I'm looking at the map here, and you had just mentioned that about 20 counties do not have these sites. It looks like a lot of them kind of up in northern northwest Minnesota. What's the reason for that?
Mr. Chair, I am only going to speak based on sort of qualitatively what I know. It takes a lot to run these tax sites, and it requires resources as well as organizations that have the capacity, the knowledge, and the expertise to run these sites. So I think it is due to a myriad factors. It is organizations that may not have the capacity or the technical support. It may be other kinds of reasons, but I think that anything that we can do to sort of support some of those what we might call deserts of free tax sites, but also support those that are currently funded will be really valuable.
So thank you. So Ms. Fishman, do you think the additional resources here would be able to help fund some of these 20 counties?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do not know enough around whether there are potential prospects that have expressed interest and are waiting for technical support and resources. I think that over time, there will be an opportunity for us to start building relationships in some of those pockets that have lack of funding and lack of people to do this work. So I hope that that might be one thing that we look at.
Very good. Representative Leslegar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that something, though, where you could have like a satellite where you go there for a short period of time and your organization kind of like an outreach goes there?
Mr. Chair, Representative, members of the committee, our organization has our direct services footprint in the metro region of the Twin Cities. And the reason it is important to have community connections is because we are so connected to our ability to recruit, support, engage, and retain volunteers. And that is why this technical support and our collective work across the state can be very important for sharing best practices, sharing resources, sharing our volunteer training materials. So we do a lot within our field and in our network to support each other. And we are very interested in continuing to support the network, even though we are not formally providing that technical assistance anymore.
Very good. Other questions? So we do have a list. Did we want to? And so Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is just a question. Where are the bankers, so the Bankers Association on this bill?
Representative Swazinski, Mr. Chair, I see Anna Odegaard coming down to answer this question. I know we have the Bankers Association in the room, and we're very pleased to have their support. Beyond that, Anna or Teresa, if there's anything else that you would want to say. I can just acknowledge that we have worked closely with the Bankers Association.
You can certainly come down to testify if you would like to do so and state your position on the bill if you would wish. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name.
Good morning. My name is Teresa Kubas. I work for the Minnesota Bankers Association. We represent 95% of the banks in Minnesota. We do support the bill. We obviously believe that any additional banking services that people can get, whether they are unbanked or underbanked, and get them into a banking product, we have been working with them, so we're not obviously working on the financial. I think the bill kind of really states kind of what we can and can't do, but definitely anyone that can get into banking or credit unions would be wonderful.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Leslegar. Did you have was that your question? Okay, very good. Chair Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the bill, as far as tax preparation goes, seems to be quite reasonable. But I heard several times, and financial services, recommendations, financial coaching. My question for the testifier is, what licenses do your volunteers hold? Because you can't give it financial advice without a license in certain areas. And then you said free financial services. What are those financial services? What kind of advice is being given? And are your volunteers covered by any errors and omissions coverage, not general liability, but errors and omissions coverage? Because if you're giving financial advice, depending on what you're giving, you have to be licensed in this state. So if you could kind of go through what licenses your volunteers hold.
Ms. Fishman.
Representative Davids, Mr. Chair. Without going into full detail, maybe I can walk you through briefly what we do and don't do on site. As you might know, the federal tax code, Form 8888, allows tax filers to direct deposit their tax refunds into up to three different accounts. So there is a natural conduit and opportunity on the federal tax forms that allow people to direct deposit into multiple accounts. And so what we have been doing over the years is working to help people direct deposit into either existing multiple accounts or working in relationship and tandem with, in our case, Sunrise Banks and Firefly Credit Union to be able to open up savings accounts on site. We have agreements with our financial partners, and we are very careful about not offering advice or information, but providing access to these accounts. People can also purchase U.S. savings bonds on the tax code. Now, as it relates to some of the other kinds of services, we do some basic information. There is a window of about maybe 2 to 3 hours where a taxpayer is coming in. They're having their tax return or returns prepared, and they're waiting for the returns to be reviewed. So they will meet with one of our seasonal staff or a trained financial advocate volunteer, and we will have basic conversations about would you like to for us to pull your credit report, for example, and we go through all of the consent information. Would you like to be referred, in our case, to one of our financial coaches at Prepare and Prosper, which is a separate program not funded through this grant, or financial counselors at Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota, if people actually want to have more formal debt counseling and management. We also will have basic conversations about management, you know, your budget, how to think about budgeting. So it is very basic information that happens at the tax site, and we are not required to have certified, like, financial advisors on site.
Chair David.
Okay, thank you. So basically it's bonds, which anybody can do, or some banking services, which is not really... And we said financial services, that'd be stocks, bonds, insurance, annuities, things like that. So it sounds quite limited. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the testifier. I was just looking up Wright County Community Action Program. So the grants will go towards to their facility or their organization. How do they also do coaching and nutrition and housing and education and other things? How is that money then limited to tax preparation?
Representative McDonald, Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, now every organization, first of all, will have to apply for the grant as they do every year. And now if this bill passes as it stands, they would have some allowance to be able to also add some money in their application or within their budget to support some of their, you know, kind of financial support at the tax site. But it will have to fit sort of within the parameters of how it works within integration at a VITA site. So if that CAP agency applies for funding, they will probably apply to support their, you know, needs for their tax program and maybe a portion of a financial coach, for example, and I'm just speaking hypothetically, a financial coach who may be able to come into the tax site and talk to people about their financial situation and potentially open up a, you know, a prepaid card or a savings account if that's not something that they offer. Those are just some examples of how they can leverage their existing assets and resources and have a portion of this funding potentially support that at the tax site. But it would have to be specific to that integrated approach at the tax site.
Representative McDonald. Anything further?
No, good. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Fishman, thank you for being here, and I appreciate Representative Lean for bringing this forward. Ms. Fishman, you talked about how relationships are really important to recruiting and retaining volunteers. Can you tell me a little bit more about kind of like how you do that, what the training's like, and what it means to be an IRS-certified mm-hmm. volunteer?
Ms. Fishman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomez, the I would say, depending upon how long a volunteer has been with us, every single volunteer goes through anywhere between 15 to 20 hours of training. Almost every year, there is something new in state and or federal tax law. So some of this is just making sure we're keeping up with tax law changes. And then there are all sorts of elements around understanding the tax return, understanding the tax forms, all of the different state and federal tax laws, understanding what is in scope, because the IRS Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program has a number of parameters around what kinds of returns we can prepare and what kind of returns are out of scope for us. So there's a lot of training that goes into all of those aspects of understanding the tax returns. We also, in our case, do training around customer service and some cultural competency training that's unique to what we offer at Prepare and Prosper. And so there, it's extensive training. And then every single year, whether you have been with us for a year or whether you have been with us for 30 years, you have to pass a test. And that is a test that is created by the IRS. And before you're able to prepare tax returns, you have to pass that test. That is very unique. That is why our quality is so high within our industry.
Please don't send that test here. Representative Gomez, anything further?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think earlier you said you had like 93% accuracy. I wonder if that isn't even better than the federal IRS sometimes. They don't always get it right either. The question that I have is in regards to other preparation services and so forth out there. I've heard a lot of advertising on TV about other free services, and I was wondering if you're aware of any that are not state-funded.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, there are, I'm not sure I'm understanding completely the question. There are certainly free file software options that actually their eligibility within income is a little bit higher than ours at $65,000 cap versus $55,000 for a family or somebody claiming dependents within a VITA site. So free file software is certainly truly free for people as long as they, are only taking advantage of the free options. I think that there are different ways that some in the industry advertise their services. Sometimes I think it can be somewhat misleading. It may be a particular simple form that is free, but if you get the earned income tax credit, for example, or the child tax credit, or the working family credit, or you actually file more than one return, free doesn't in fact always mean free, whereas with VITA, free does mean free. So I'm not sure I'm answering your question specifically, but it is important for taxpayers to understand the difference and really if free does in fact mean free.
Representative Peters.
Thank you. I was kind of going that same direction. I was just curious about other services because how people advertise isn't always necessarily the reality, and I was just clarifying that because I'm guessing these, not all cases, but most of these are going to be a little bit more on the simple side compared to others because tax preparation can be expensive. So thank you for that comments. Thank you.
Very good. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was interested in page 4, line 4.3 through 4.10, talking about reporting. And I know that this is an assessment program, and we're talking about increasing that. I see that. But what I don't see in that is a line that talks about report back to the legislature. Is that something that is in existing law, that there's a specific report back to the legislature of the majority and the minority members, leads of the committee, I mean?
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Representative O'Neill, we don't have that in the bill. I mean, I'd certainly be open to that. We do have, the 5% allowance for revenue to do administrative functions. So I guess I would want to have the conversation with them if that 5% allows them to cover the technical assistance and the reporting to the legislature, because the report would go to revenue first, so I assume it would be on them to give the information to the legislature. But we can certainly have that conversation, and as we move forward, if this is included in the omnibus bill, I mean, that's certainly an amendment that I would be definitely open to.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that would be helpful. And I know this is not an exclusive list because it's not limited to, but maybe it just seems like there are a couple points that were in the testimony that were kind of missed in the 4 points, and maybe just kind of tie that up together, too, would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative O'Neill, I'd certainly be happy to continue conversations with you, other reporting ideas for you. In the back of my mind, because it's a new service, I thought, yeah, we should have some reporting to show how this is, you know, indeed helping people, if that is the case. I did want to pay attention, though, that, you know, I don't want to get too in-depth with individual information, Social Security numbers, things like that. So that was just something we have to think about. But certainly happy to continue the conversation with you.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. That just made me think of one other quick thing. So I worked with Lutheran Social Services on some grant money so that they could do more services for financial services and counseling. And one thing that was really important was sort of a pre and a post look at their credit history, their credit score, which is something that is very fluid and changes almost daily sometimes. I look at mine all the time. Not as much now that I'm here because I'm here 12 hours a day, but I used to look at it almost every day. But anyway, that was just a really quick, easy measure. And obviously de-identified information. We don't want identified information, but just a sense as to the financial reporting or financial advice. And is it actually helping people with their credit scores? It was just something that we did with Lutheran Social Services, and I know they're kind of a component of this. But as an example of, you know, how much are we really helping folks, it's a real easy standard. But we can talk offline, but it was just some things I was thinking about as I was reading through your bill. Thank you.
Representative Sean.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Lean, for bringing this bill. I just had a question about how organizations like Prepare and Prosper attracts clients. I know that my mom certainly was a beneficiary back in the day, raising eight of us. And, you know, she doesn't speak English, but how does organizations like Prepare and Prosper help reach out to clients and attract clients?
Ms. Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zhang, thank you for that question. The number one way that people hear about us is word of mouth. And thus, the quality of the experience when they come to us is very important to us. We do a lot of work with other nonprofits, hundreds of nonprofits that we work with who distribute our materials, our brochures in particular. We have materials available in multiple languages, and the Minnesota Department of Revenue makes information available in languages such as Hmong, Somali, and other languages to ensure that people can access information about where to go, and also sites that actually have either interpreters or are likely to have volunteers or seasonal staff who speak the languages of particular communities. So, you know, as I said, we serve close to 13,000 people. We are not able to serve everybody who comes through our doors as it is. We work, as I said, with lots of nonprofits, a lot of word of mouth, a lot of earned media, as much as we can get into local community papers, local radio shows. So it's really an array of a marketing and promotion that we do to spread the word. But I think, as you heard already, resources are not sufficient to keep up with the demand. And so that is one of the kind of double-edged challenges that we experience is the better we are at spreading the word about our services, the more people who come to us.
Representative
Sean. And following up on, you know, what you mentioned about resources, so we're in the middle of tax season right now. Can you describe, you know, what the workload is like for the volunteers?
Ms. Fishman.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Zhang. I'm happy to have one of our volunteers who has been with us for 4 years join me today, Bill Johnston. He can certainly speak from his own perspective. We have volunteers that commit to a minimum of working with us one shift a week. People like Bill work two or more shifts a week. We have shifts during the day, during the evening, and on weekends. And we do a lot during the tax season and all year to also make sure that our volunteers are able to just feel engaged, are provided with continuing education and support. If there are things that we learn about even a moment of a tax law change or an update from the IRS or the Department of Revenue, we have huddles before every shift to be able to provide that information. We send out regular emails. So even with 550 people, we have lots of decentralized and centralized ways of communicating and engaging with our volunteers.
Thank you. Very good. Representative Leslie Gard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank you for bringing this forward. This is one of these programs that really helps the people who need it the most. And, you know, my mom and dad, for example, we all know taxes are real simple. But it just really brings that service to the people who need it most. So I really like this bill, and we're blessed in St. Louis County to have three different spots. I do wish that it could reach farther, and I know that there's probably going to be work to be done. Four. But thank you so much for bringing this forward, Representative Lee.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I have a couple of questions. One of the things that you pointed out immediately was, you know, when I take a look at the map and I see the district that I represent, it's right. I think someone referred to it as a desert. I'm not exactly sure who that was. But it's not as cold up there right now. But so I'm just curious to know how to, you know, when you say that community actions and you're reaching out, what outreach have you done in far northwestern Minnesota? Because the nearest places, if you live in Hallock, for example, it's 125 miles to Manoman. If you live in Roseau, it's 130 miles to Bemidji. Help me out.
You know, Representative Fabian, that's a great question. I was kind of wondering, you know, I mean, is that the Department of Revenue, or are they working with the Community Action Partnerships, or how does that work exactly? Because I noticed that right away, too. There's just kind of a pocket there where Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, that's a good question. I think the short answer is I think we'd have to go back and think about how we can get these services to more parts of the state, how we can do more outreach to other organizations. I know Prepare and Prosper was handling a lot of technical assistance for the various organizations around the state. Under this bill, that would be done by the Department of Revenue. So, you know, more conversations with revenue, more conversations with other community partners, community action organizations, other nonprofits, you know, Lutheran Social Services. They're able to do the NFCC financial counseling, so maybe bringing some of those organizations into the conversation too. I think that's something we'd have to think about, how we can get these services out to more parts of the state.
I know Ms. Raleigh from the Department of Revenue is going to be testifying too. She might be able to answer that. But Representative Fabian.
Okay. Well, then, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious. On page 4, 4.15, it talks about current base funding. What is the current? And if you said the number, I apologize if I missed it. What is the current base? Is it 4?
Representative Lean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, yes, it is $400,000 per fiscal year.
Okay.
Representative Fabian.
And then, Mr. Chair, in the testimony, I thought I heard the number that there had been 1,300 people that had been helped, and they got refunds of whatever. I'm curious to know, with that $400,000, how many people actually were helped with that? I mean,
Ms. Fishman, do we have those numbers?
Representative, Mr. Chair, so I have some data that I was able to get from my partner at the Asset Building Coalition and the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and I'm just going to repeat what I said. There were 33 nonprofit organizations that were operating 100 sites across the state, and together they prepared 104,000 tax returns. So that's not individuals served. Any, you know, individual may have federal plus one or two state returns. I can tell you that at Prepare and Prosper, we file about 25,000 tax returns alone just at our organization. I don't know exactly how many people were served, but, you know, 104,000 returns. I don't know what the total amount of tax refunds were for those, but I think that if we try to look at some averages between an average of a $2,000 earned income tax credit, for example, and additional tax credits, that's significant money that's going back into our communities. So the return on investment is quite high for these kinds of investments when you think about this being a $400,000 program altogether.
Yeah, just Representative Lean, anything to add to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have some information here. It's VITA and AARP, so I would assume those AARP providing these services. For calendar year 18, it was 76,650 1040s prepared, 78,801 state income tax returns prepared, and the amount of the refund for the 1040s was $69.4 million, and for the state, $21.6 million.
Anything further, Representative?
Just if revenue, what do they get then for administrative fees out of the appropriation?
I think, is it 5%, Representative Lean, for administration? Administration, the Department of Revenue, what percent?
Under the bill, Mr. Chair, yeah. Representative Fabian, under the bill, it's a 5% allowance of the appropriation. Thank
you. Very good. So So those are all the questions we have for right now, and I know we've got three more testifiers, so if we would please come forward and we'll let the testifiers proceed. And so welcome to the committee, and please state your name.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Hello, members of the committee. My name is Hassan Al-Sadiq. I'm currently working in an arts organization named Juxtaposition Arts, located in North Minneapolis, where the majority of my focus is on community engagement and development. I also work with some justice system reforms at a grassroots level, and a lot of the work that I do in those capacities actually overlap with the bill that's presented today. Financial independence and financial literacy is something that I have not always had an understanding of, and I was privileged in the fall of 2017 to participate in a six-month youth-led violence prevention initiative in Minneapolis, where the group underwent an extreme focused period of training, where we became financially aware of our spending habits and our emotional relationships to our finances. We were also granted by Emerge Work and Career Readiness Program free financial coaching and made aware of the little-known Tax Prep Help Clinic offered as a wraparound supportive service to our community. When I chose to take advantage of the free tax prep offered by Emerge last spring of 2018, it was my very first time ever filing my taxes on my own and even looking at my W-2s with the knowledge about what I would do with them. I had previously tried earlier that same tax season using a paid tax preparer right down the street from Emerge and was denied service because it would cost more paying the preparer than I would actually get in the refund at first glance. So I had absolutely no experience, was completely clueless, and became a little intimidated as to what information would be needed, shared, and with whom. How to use the easy-to-use tax prep software services like TurboTax, and if I were to go to a paid preparer, what questions I'd be able to ask to get, you know, a real refund, and so on and so forth. And through the opportunity granted to me through Emerge, my volunteer tax prep helper walked me through step-by-step how to prepare and collect the proper paperwork and information needed to file my taxes using the free tax software service and how to even read my W-2s. My helper was very informative about concerns I had in terms of privacy. They also informed me on how to file and use the tax calculator tool myself for future references when the tax season comes along. And I know for certain that without these free financial coaching opportunities, in addition to the free tax prep clinic, help clinic, that I would that have helped me to understand my financial position and how to file my taxes independent of any third party using simple accessible tools like TurboTax, I would not be in the controlled financial position I'm currently in, actively managing my student loan debt, finding and financing a living independent living expense and my career-focused budgets. There's a real need to continue and expand these types of programs so that our next generations of youth and young adults may come into a world ready to help them transition seamlessly into financial independence and become engaged citizens.
Thank you very much. Next testifier.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Johnston. I have been a
volunteer tax preparer at Prepare and Prosper for 4 years now. I work two shifts a week and have also done taxes, you know, between seasons. I want to correct one thing Stacy said. She said that in order to do taxes every year, we have to pass a test. We have to pass four. And I have to pass them every year, too. So, throughout my experience, I've actually played multiple roles. I'm a tax preparer. I have been a financial advocate. And now I am also a reviewer of completed taxes. Providing free tax services to low to middle income individuals on the surface is an obvious method for supporting these hardworking families to claim all of their refunds and other credits. Just as importantly, however, it's a vehicle for kickstarting or restarting opportunities to sustainably manage their finances more effectively. In my years of providing this service, I've worked with hundreds of individuals, each of whom has their own story. Sometimes people come in, they'll sit at my desk, and they've got their grandchildren or their children crawling over their lap. Might be a disabled person who comes in with another person to help them in the conversation, the interview that we conduct to make sure that their tax situation is appropriate to their circumstances. I recall one young woman who came in. She was very nervous. You sit there with someone for a year, for an hour or two, and talking about their finances, and they can become very open with you. And she had told me of the trauma in her life for the last two or three years. She had not completed any of her taxes, and this was one reason she was nervous when she came in. She had no idea what her penalties would be, how much she'd owe. After a couple of hours, again, of working with her, it was all done, and I showed her the results, and I said, "You're getting a refund of about $2,500," and she started to cry. And I mean, this was 2 years ago, and I still remember it. I think that it was just the universe, I think, rewarding her for, you know, getting all the bricks back in the wall. She went from there to our Money Mentors program, where she met with someone who would sit down with her once a month for 6 months and help her to get her family budget organized and her finances straightened out. As a tax preparer, I always encourage our customers who are getting money back to put some of their refund into savings or to buy bonds. We talk with them how to manage their cash flow, how to keep good records, especially if they're self-employed or they have children in school, how to anticipate needs and not get caught behind an eight ball. We guide them into programs that will help them become savers, lower their banking costs, or manage their finances on a month-to-month basis. In my 4 years of Prepare and Prosper, I continue to see the organization evolve to meet customers' needs and manage some of their financial realities. Providing financial capability services, like opening a bank account or offering financial coaching, makes our customers more stable. Another customer who could not be here today, her name is Penthea, and she wrote this one paragraph and asked us to share it with you. Penthea wrote, "I am really grateful for the benefits of Prepare and Prosper. They encourage customers to save for the future, even those who feel that they are unable to save, as they let you know that just because you're low income doesn't mean you can't put something aside for the future, in several ways, like opening a savings account or purchasing bonds. I was never made to feel bad because of my income or that it was impossible for me to save. I was always encouraged to save money, and I have always appreciated that encouragement. The Prepare and Prosper tax preparers truly care and are very knowledgeable. I'm so thankful for the service they've provided all these years for me and my family. Every year, I do see individuals like
Mr. Johnston, I appreciate your testimony.
No, go ahead.
One more, Bill, if you could just kind of finish up here. And we've got at least one more testifier. So appreciate it very much. But
I appreciate the opportunity to testify. Appreciate your support. Thank you for considering this this bill.
And thank you for sharing your experiences.
Thank
appreciate
you.
That very much. The Department of Revenue, Ms. Raleigh, and if you would come down, and I want to finish this bill up in 2 minutes because we've got Representative Haley patiently waiting here also for her bill. So please proceed.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Cynthia Raleigh. I'm an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I'd like to thank Representative Lean and the stakeholders for bringing this forward. The Department of Revenue's vision is that everyone reports, pays, and receives the right amount, no more, no less. And the VitaSites definitely help us achieve that vision. VitaSites provide an important service in helping people prepare their returns. Currently, there are over 200 sites, as was mentioned before, and they've assisted over 75,000 customers last year. They are a vital part of the revenue system. And the Minnesota Department of Revenue actually sponsors 7 of those sites here in the Twin Cities. The provisions in this bill fill an important gap. They support Minnesotans in meeting their tax responsibilities by providing technical assistance that contributes to the successful operation of the VitaSites and helps taxpayers build for their financial future. An important component of this service is the support to VitaSites, including, as I heard a number of questions here, the potential to expand sites. And so the funding that is included as 5% of the overall appropriation will go part of the way to fill that, but the Department of Revenue will be completing a fiscal note to cover the cost to do the expansion of from supporting 20 to 30 sites to supporting 200 and hopefully a growing number of sites as we move forward.
Very good.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 1862 as amended? If not, Representative Lean, closing comments.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I appreciate your consideration of this bill. Thank you for the conversation today.
Thank you very much. Representative Lean renews his motion to lay over House File 1862 as amended for possible inclusion into the omnibus report. Thank you so much, Representative Lean, testifiers. Representative Haley.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 2104.
Very good. Representative Erickson moves House File 2104 for possible inclusion of the tax omnibus bill. And Representative Haley, welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2104 is a bill about the Nuclear Decommissioning Reserve Fund. I will explain it briefly, and then I'll turn it over to my testifiers. The Nuclear Decommissioning Reserve Fund was established and is regulated under federal law. And basically, it prescribes that investment earnings are exempt from the Minnesota corporate franchise tax until they are drawn on for use in the state. This is what my bill is trying to accomplish, and we'll give you a little background. The NRC, or the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission require that every nuclear power plant owner in the U.S. has to set aside sufficient funds during the life of the plant so that they have money available for decommissioning. In compliance with this law, Xcel Energy established a Nuclear Decommissioning Reserve Fund. This is a separate legal entity whose trustee is BNY Mellon Bank in Pennsylvania. All the investment income from this fund accrues under the Nuclear Regulatory Commission rules. Withdrawals are restricted to decommissioning expenses and administrative costs that would be directly related to that. My bill does nothing to change the structure or the law. What the bill addresses is Minnesota corporate franchise law and how these taxes affect ratepayers. Our Minnesota corporate franchise law doesn't specifically address how this type of fund should be treated. The fund doesn't have property, it doesn't have payroll or sales in the state. And as I said previously, all investment income stays in the fund. Investment earnings do not accrue or pass through to the company Xcel Energy. The funds will, however, become taxable when they're drawn on for use in Minnesota. So again, if and when the nuclear power plant decommissions, that's what the funds would be used for, and at that point they would be taxed. In that sense, it operates like a 401k. The investment income is not taxed until it's drawn on. What we're trying to do with this is not have ratepayers basically be taxed twice, be taxed when the funds go in and then be taxed when they come out. So under this bill, what I'm proposing is that XL ratepayers would only pay taxes on the investment income once. In summary, the Nuclear Decommissioning Reserve Fund is unique and a separate legal entity that doesn't have property or payroll or sales in Minnesota. The investment income accrues to the fund and not to the company, and the fund should only become taxable when they are drawn on for potential decommissioning. With that background, I can turn it over to my testifiers, or we could move directly to questions.
So let's do testifiers, and we'll move to some questions. So please proceed. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Grania McKernan. I'm with XL Energy. I would just quickly summarize a couple of points, and that is that this is a non-resident, basically trust fund that the investment income does not accrue to the company. It stays in the fund and is only usable when it's drawn on for decommissioning costs, at which point then it is taxable income in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Good. Chair.
Thank you. And next, another. Go, please proceed.
I don't have a statement at this time.
I'm sorry. We have Ryan Merrill with XL Tax Staff to answer any questions members may have. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if, I don't know if the author or someone from XL can tell me a little bit more about the cost of this tax being passed on to ratepayers. Does that refer to ratepayers in Minnesota only, or in all of the jurisdictions where XL operates, or all the jurisdictions that pay into the nuclear fund, or whatever you call this, the nuclear decommissioning fund?
Ms. McKernan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomez, it would be NSP Minnesota serves North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota, and the nuclear costs, of which this would be a part, are allocated across that jurisdiction.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it would be ratepayers in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota that pay for the taxes, basically, now.
Ms. McKernan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomez, yes.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so is there, since you say right now the tax is being passed on to ratepayers, if we were to adopt this measure and those taxes weren't collected, would there be a reduction in rates for the people in the NSP area?
Ms.
For ratepayers, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomez, yes, the way that it would flow is that every 3 years the Public Utilities Commission reviews the projected decommissioning costs for the three units that XL Energy has in Minnesota, and adjusts the amount that's collected from customers accordingly, so that when that happens, it's coming up in the next year, the projected costs, to the extent that they would not be sufficient and an adjustment upwards was in order, it would be offset by the amount that this reduction happens. And that happens directly in the fund. The company collects the money from ratepayers. It's submitted to the fund, and after that, we do not have access. So it would simply be that the commission tells XL you can collect that much less from your customers in rates.
Thank you.
Very good. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick two-part question. Do you know what the current balance of that fund is, and what is the anticipated cost of decommissioning?
Ms. McKernan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, yes, the current balance is about $2.2 billion, and I believe the projected costs are $3.5 billion at this time.
Thank you.
And Representative, Mr. Chair, that 3.5 is for all three units.
Yes.
Because, again, the fund covers all three units.
Thank you.
Very good. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 2104? Seeing none, I will come back to members. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Haley, for bringing this forward. You and I both have host communities that have shouldered the nuclear power plants. I always say Monticello nuclear power plant. It just flows off my tongue. So thank you for bringing this forward. And this is a real conversation. As we know, Monticello has end of licensure in 2030, which seems like a long time out, but in energy world and utility world, that's very, very quick. And particularly with some different bills that have come forward and initiatives from the governor's office wanting to decommission. I don't know if they want to decommission sooner. I'm not quite sure, but there was one bill about 100% renewable and not including nuclear, so I'm not sure how you get to that. Or 100% carbon-free was another one, not having current nuclear, which to me is incredibly problematic. So anything that we can do to kind of help the communities with a glide path, it's incredibly impactful to our communities, and I appreciate you bringing this forward. If you have any information as to how, as the decommissioning process happens, how are the communities helped with that glide path? Is there any information that you have regarding that? And if not, that's okay, but it's a conversation at some point we'll probably have to have.
So, Representative Haley, what I'm going to do is if you could answer that question and then provide your closing statements on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Neill. Nothing in this bill talks about that, as you referred to it, that glide path of decommissioning and the tax implications for host communities. That is a significant discussion, which I think both you and I and others will be having, and there will be proposals, maybe not this year but next year, on how we support communities through that process. But thank you for bringing that up. Thank you, members, for hearing this proposal, and I would appreciate your sending it forward.
Thank you very much. Representative Erickson renews her motion to lay over House File 2104 for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill. So thank you very much. Members, thank you for your work this week. Have an excellent weekend, and we are adjourned.